The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
And welcome once again, guys. This is Woo Reacts, and tonight Woo Reacts to the 2017 edition of WWE Hell in a Cell. Ow.
Yeah, if you're going to do it, you have to do the grovel without hurting yourself. It's Hell in a Cell. See?
Unfortunately, that's the wrong McMahon in tonight's case.
But he was there in spirit and possibly in production.
Exactly. As always, I am your host, Patrick Hesse, and joining me also, as always, Mr. Harry Broadhurst. And, you know, for not liking a yearly gimmick pay-per-view like you do, and I know you do, and I'm kind of iffy, but I want to say that for tonight, I think they kind of did the match justice for its 20th anniversary.
Well, the opener certainly did. We'll get to the main event in due time, because it's one of those ones that's going to stick in your craw one way or another. There are a lot of people who are going to have certain feelings about it due to the sheer length of it, and we'll talk about that when we get there. There's also a lot of people that are going to have issues with it due to the booking of it as well, and we'll talk about that too. We've got a jam-packed show to get to, Patrick, though, so let's get started. What do you say?
Yeah.
What are we a presentation of before we get started, though?
I was trying to get there. We are, as always, a presentation of the W2N Network. You can find all kinds of reviews. Wow, I just blanked for a second. You can find all kinds of reviews, including our most recent regular episode of Wrestling Unwrapped, covering the match that celebrated its 20th anniversary this past Thursday in WWE Hell in a Cell, as we cover WWE Bad Blood in Your House. You can find that. You can find the brand new, but
not to be a stickler, but it was WWF Bad Blood.
Oh, shut up. You can also find the brand new College Football Top 25 rankings after yesterday's ungodly massacre that was my predictions team. Screw you, Utah.
Hey, I'm all over that top 25, too. I'd have the Big Ten blurbs. I'm all over W2M, man. In addition, you can also find our newest written reviews, which we promise to get back to eventually.
The year 2020.
That's the long-standing joke on these episodes. No, seriously. Patrick and I are actually hoping to set aside a day this week in order to work on St. Valentine's Day Massacre 1999 for our written reviews. We'll let you guys know how that progresses this Sunday when we return to our regular spot right here on Wrestling Unwrapped. Bang, bang.
And you can find all of that and more on the one and only W2Mnet.com. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/WrestlingUnwrapped. You can also find us on Twitter at WU Off The Shelf, based on the original name of this podcast. Whoopsie.
I think this episode is going up on 411 Mania, too.
It is also up on 411 Mania, and not only that, it's also up on Last Word on ProWrestling.com. So thank you to those guys. I do apologize for, let's call it spade a spade here, forgetting. Sorry. So let's get to it. The longest 3-hour pay-per-view in the network era. I'm almost certain of it. We got to start somewhere. It's the one night that the WWE goes to hell. This is Wu Reacts to Hell in a Cell. And kicking things off was the kickoff.
Before we kick things off, I have feel the need to comment on your statement there about the one night that the WWE goes to hell. Intentionally.
Oh, shut up.
You know.
Featuring the kickoff match of WGTTT, World's Greatest Tag Team 2.0.
I would just go with WGTT 2.0.
Or almost American Alpha? Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin taking on the hype bros of Zack Ryder and Mojo Rawley. And I'll just put it this way. Damn, Chad Gable's so damn good. And he's got such a damn good tag team partner. And why are they being relegated to being stuck with the hype bros? Because, especially a soon-to-be feuding hype bros, as once again, their disagreements get the better of them, enabling Gable and Benjamin, that is the actual name, they don't have an actual name thus far, might change soon, to pick up the win in about 10 minutes. And basically, this whole match, the match was secondary. The whole thing was to kind of continue the disagreements that Ryder and Mojo are having. And I'm almost wondering how long until this comes to a head. Do we get maybe a tag team Survivor Series match next month? Or, it's kind of how much longer can they really be having these disagreements that's now costing them matches?
Well, I'm going to be the first person to admit that I cannot comment on the match itself because, unfortunately, I'm on the 360, and my 360 had some streaming issues with the network during the pre-show. Thankfully, during the pay-per-view, no such problems. Unfortunately, said streaming issues that I had during the pre-show caused me to miss the vast majority of this contest. I got it working again just in time to see the finish with the power bomb hooking clothesline heart attack kind of gimmick thing by WGTT 2.0. But that's all, folks. All right, moving on. As far as the turning of the hype bros against each other goes, if there is going to be a Survivor Series tag team match, Raw versus SmackDown, it would make sense to happen there. If there's not, then I would imagine sometime in the upcoming weeks on SmackDown Live on Tuesdays.
Could it go as far as maybe SmackDown Live presents Halloween Havoc?
I don't know where you're getting the idea. Oh, you mean the live SmackDown on Halloween night this year?
I'm going to keep calling it that, whether or not they actually make it a thing. They made Sin City SmackDown a thing. They can make Halloween Havoc happen.
Wait, what's today's date?
For me, the 8th. For you, the 9th.
Okay, so 7, 8, 9, 16. Halloween's on a Wednesday, sir.
Halloween's on a Tuesday.
Are you sure about that one?
Yes, because Tuesday would be the 10th.
Yeah, Tuesday would be the
10th. 3 weeks would be the 31st.
Yeah, 3 weeks. You're right. Okay, my math got a little screwed up there. All right. I don't think it'll happen, but at the same time, we do have Starrcade to possibly look forward to. Maybe.
Possibly. Anyway.
Potentially.
Yeah, we hope. Anyway. So that about, wraps that up, and you get kind of a surprising finish to the kickoff show in that the Cell starts lowering. We're kicking things off with a Hell in a Cell match, and in this case, the most hype match you could ever possibly have, Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon are kicking off the pay-per-view. Obviously not. So it is for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships, the final chapter, it is the New Day defending their belts against the Usos. Holy hell. This was not fun and games. This was only the third, technically, tag team Hell in a Cell match, arguably the fourth. And, yeah. Wow, they beat the ever-loving hell out of each other and stole the show to start the show.
Yeah, whoever in SmackDown Creative's decision it was to put the format for this show together and have this match open, you're a damn moron. Because you instantly killed the crowd right here and there. There was nothing on the front half of the show that was going to live up to this. These guys managed to make the crowd not care about most of the AJ Styles match. Think about that for a second. They didn't care about an AJ Styles match. They sat on their hands for most of the match, for most of the triple
because
threat.
Because they knew who was winning.
See, I disagree, because I don't think anybody had Corbin walking out. I had Styles retaining, pinning I figured Dillinger was going to be in the match. I had Styles retaining, pinning Dillinger.
Yeah, you might be the only person I know that actually had Styles taking it.
Oh, no, there were a bunch of people in the predictions thing that picked Styles. But anyways, moving on, back to the Hell in a Cell match at hand here. Yeah, I don't know if it's the greatest Hell in a Cell match, but I think it's certainly in the top five. To me, it doesn't. It's not quite to the level of Cactus Jack and Triple H. I would say probably as good as Taker and Mankind, if not as historically important.
I would put it at the top 10, but I don't know that I would even say it's the best one tonight.
I would certainly say it's the best one tonight. I think the main event tonight gets the added benefit of the finish working out so well, because for a large portion of the main event tonight, I found myself disinterested. We'll get there.
But, I mean, in terms of this match, this was brutal, and this was just incredible. All four guys that were in here, which, by the way, Kofi was the one who was not in for the New Day, and the Usos did not have to have a third. I won't get into the names, Harry, so shut up. So just Jimmy Uso, Jey Uso, Xavier Woods, and Big E just beat the ever-loving hell out of each other. My question is, why the hell are there so many kendo sticks under the ring? There had to be close to a dozen, including several multicolored ones in the New Day style, which I found, I actually thought that it added a little bit, because it's like, oh yeah, you know, the New Day are fun and joyous and you know, happy-go-lucky guys, but when it gets down to it, they'll still beat the hell out of you. And at one point, Xavier trapped Uso in the corner of the cell with several of the candlesticks, which I did not expect, and I loved it when he actually pulled that. Too bad it didn't last too long, because one of the candlesticks popped out, but this felt like a final chapter match. It goes about 22 minutes, but this actually felt like a final chapter match. The one issue I had was the crowd chanting, "This is awesome," less than 5 minutes in. This match was awesome, not that quick.
I mean, it was on from their word go in this match, though. And I think that was the interesting part about it, is they made no bones about it here. One of the very first spots in the entire match was the tandem-assisted fish drop with the chain.
The very first spot of the match was everyone going out and grabbing weapons, too. Including grabbing that chain, which even the commentators were like, what the hell?
It's a WWE ring. You never know what's under there, man.
Apparently.
If years of being a wrestling fan have taught me anything, if you need something, look under a WWE ring and you'll probably find it.
MacGyver calls WWE when he needs something to check under the ring.
I'm going to go ahead and just ignore that MacGyver joke.
Am I wrong?
Depends. Old school MacGyver or new current edition MacGyver?
Oh, no, screw new MacGyver.
Hmm?
Screw new MacGyver.
I like the new MacGyver TV series.
Anyway.
We're getting off track here. Let's get back onto the subject at hand, because these things run long enough as it is.
I would definitely say
that these guys lived up to the legacy created in the first tag team Hell in a Cell match, because I thought that one was very good, too, even if it was necessary a foregone conclusion as to who was going to win that one. I thought the Legacy versus DX one was really good, actually, other than the fact that the finish was a foregone conclusion.
That wasn't the first one.
Well, not counting the tag match that aired on Raw.
And?
That was a handicap match, not a tag match.
Oh, what the hell? It was 3-on-2. It was a tag match.
That's a handicap match, sir. Anyway, semantics aside, I definitely think that it lived up to the
it lived up to the Legacy versus DX one, if not surpassing it, I think.
I would dare say maybe this wasn't as brutal as the handicap tag team match, the DX versus the McMahons and Big Show, but that, for the longest time, was one of my favorites, and I would dare say that it passed that by. This was just four guys going out there, balls to the wall, and trying to prove who the better team was. In the end, it ends up being the Usos, which, you know, we got this last year with Charlotte and Sasha constantly trading off the belts, mostly because at the time the women's roster was pretty thin. We're kind of in that situation now where the Usos in a New Day, well, now they're done. So in my head, I've got to think Gable and Benjamin next.
Try that again.
I've got to think that, you know, if this was the quote-unquote final chapter, at least for now, for the New Day and the Usos, Gable and Benjamin next?
Well, that's the prediction that I made on the roundtable for the W2M Network roundtable that you can find over on W2MNet.com.
Fair point.
I picked the Usos in this match because I figured the Usos had more babyface teams as challengers lined up that could work for them rather than having to figure out who are going to be the new heel contenders for the New Day. Honestly, based on what we saw tonight and the Fashion Police, I wouldn't be surprised to see an Ascension face one.
I could also see another potential team, but that'll be down the line. So our next contest, speaking of down, Randy Orton and Rusev, they're finally going to have an actual match this time. Why are they having an actual match this time? I didn't think this match was bad, but it was slow, and yes, at times it was boring, and then great finish, almost. Randy Orton ends up hitting an RKO out of nowhere after getting out of the accolade. Well, okay, thwarting Rusev's attempts to put on the accolade. And Randy Orton ends up being the winner again. I didn't think it was that bad of a match. Slow, yes. But this was semi-motivated Randy Orton, and who apparently also used Brock Lesnar's barber.
Is Randy sleeping with somebody in creative? Like, what point did he have winning this match?
Do you want me to answer that?
Oh, I didn't know?
Like, he's so muscular, damn it.
That's two. Actually, three, technically, for keeping track. But anyway.
Two.
You made me lose my train of thought, you dick. All right.
Why did he win?
Oh, yeah. I think the interesting thing for me to come out of this match is the look on Rusev's face as he was walking away from the ring, and what's Rusev going to do to kind of redeem himself. I honestly think a double turn would do both of these guys good, because a lot of the crowd wants to cheer for Rusev, and I think there's a very strong portion of the crowd that does not want to cheer for Randy.
And by majority, you mean everyone.
Well, you know.
That's two.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what we do on this show, Patrick. What we do.
Plug other people's podcasts. Very good. That'll put butts in seats.
It's anyway. Still real to us, damn it. All right, moving on.
I mean, what?
Seriously, give me a logical reason why Randy won this match.
I can't. I really can't. There's no reason why Randy should have won this. And especially with the fact that you could have had Aiden English run in on the damn match and cost Orton. He was nowhere to be seen except for the kickoff show. Even though he's kind of, you know, a part of this whole thing, especially with the RKO hashtag out of nowhere that he ate on Rusev Day. which, by the way, was today also Rusev Day? Because he kept acting like it was.
It's always Rusev Day, Patrick. You should know that by now. Come on.
I think if you're Rusev, it's always Lana Day.
All right, that's fair, actually. That's a fair point. Fair point.
Yeah, because once again, Rusev gets to go home and match to that.
Hey, if you're going home to that, you're never a loser.
If you're facing Randy Orton, though, you're always a loser. Ask Bray. Ask Cena at time. All right, anyway. Ask Dolph. Oh, wait. Anyway. So, yeah, Orton picks up the win for reasons. Our next contest is for the United States Championship. It is AJ Styles putting the belt up against Baron Corbin and Ty Dillinger. And the one thing I didn't mention with the kickoff is Ty Dillinger actually convinced, in the most ungodly of ways, Daniel Bryan to add him to the United States Championship match to make it a triple threat. As soon as I saw this, I knew what was going to happen, and sure enough, ta-da, it happened. Ty ends up being the one to eat the pinfall. And Baron Corbin ends up picking up the victory to win his very first championship in his WWE career, becoming the United States Champion. Now, you mentioned the crowd being kind of flat for this. I didn't really think so at times. Namely, whenever Baron Corbin wasn't involved. I felt like when it was Dillinger versus AJ, I thought the crowd was getting into it. And it felt like, and not to mention the fact that just the small bits that those two had, man, they work well together. Because that's the kind of match I would want to see. I almost felt bad that Baron Corbin was in the damn match, and of course he wins the damn match. Ty ends up being the pinfall after a phenomenal forearm, and then Baron Corbin does not just kick AJ out of the ring, he hoofs AJ out of the ring, because ow. I didn't think this was that bad of a match, although definitely suffered from WWE booking of a triple threat match, which is one-on-one, someone outside. They switch in, someone goes out. One-on-one, blah, 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 and we go around and around and around until the very end when you had all three guys. But be that as it may, man, I wish it was Ty versus AJ.
What do you have against Corbin? Like, I don't get what everybody's beef with Corbin is. I actually really enjoy his work.
I enjoy his work. I do. But I think it was just the fact that seeing what we saw, seeing what I saw with Ty and AJ, I thought those two meshed really well. Ty didn't do bad with Corbin. AJ and Corbin, to me, not great. I thought the best pairing in this was Ty and AJ, and thereby that leaves Corbin the odd man out.
Okay, but if you're going to have an odd man out situation, don't blame it on Corbin. Blame it on Creative for putting the match together. Because I think Styles and Corbin one-on-one would have been very entertaining without needing to pigeonhole Dillinger into this match. If you wanted to do Corbin and Dillinger for the title, let Corbin beat Styles for the belt tonight and then do the Corbin-Dillinger match down the road for the belt, since Dillinger has a ready-made clause for a title shot since he beat Corbin on SmackDown on Tuesday.
But I don't want Corbin and Dillinger. I want AJ and Dillinger.
We already got AJ and Dillinger on SmackDown twice.
And it was great.
You're just hating on Corbin.
It does sound a lot like that.
Plus, Corbin's new theme song is awesome.
Okay, I couldn't understand it.
I'll send it to you once we finish the show. I think you'll like it.
I can YouTube it, but I couldn't understand what was being said. That's
what I'm saying. I will send you the full link to the full version of the song once we get off of the show.
All right, fine. Jeez.
Mm.
So, congrats to... I almost said Darren Corbin, damn it. Congrats to Baron Corbin.
Well, let's talk about what happened on Talking Smack here, because apparently we're going to have the one-on-one rematch between Styles and Corbin on SmackDown Tuesday night.
I don't think they shoehorned this like what happened the last time AJ lost the title. Even though that actually kind of was accidental.
Well, that depends if Chris Jericho shows up or not. If Chris Jericho shows up, we'll know the fix is in.
Yeah, we'll see. But, I mean, here's the thing. Most likely Corbin wins. So does that move AJ up potentially? Or are we talking, and maybe we're talking about Ty and Corbin for a little bit? What do you think happens here?
Well, we were talking about this in the wrestling chat over on Facebook here, the W2M wrestling chat. It's the staff for the writers of the wrestling site, part of the page and stuff. And I mentioned the fact that I'm almost thinking that if Mahal retains here, that moves Styles up to Mahal as the next challenger. And I got to think that had something to do with them wanting to at least maybe try to get him in the ring with somebody capable of working a style that Mahal is competent working, rather than having to work that strike-based style like he's having to work with Nakamura.
So slow and boring. Even though AJ's slow and boring?
Yeah, something like that. Sounds about right.
There we go. Speaking of slow and boring, our next contest is for the SmackDown Live Women's Championship. It is Natalya versus Charlotte Flair. Has every match that wasn't inside of the cell had a very extended period of somebody having a rest hold? Because that happened here quite a bit.
I wanted to care about this match. I really did.
You're not alone.
Like, these two had a cracker in NXT at TakeOver. Not any subtitle TakeOver, just TakeOver, the one that was just called TakeOver. It was for the vacant NXT Women's title that Paige had retained at a rival before she went up to the main roster and beat AJ Lee for the women's for the Divas title on her first night on the roster. So they vacated the NXT title, and then these two were the finals of the NXT titles tournament, and they had a match on NXT TakeOver before they started giving it fancy-dancy subtitles such as War Games and...
That also, ironically, shoehorned in pretty much the exact same damn storyline we got for this one that is complete BS. Being the whole Hearts versus Flares thing. There's never been a thing with the Hearts and the Flares. The only thing you really had was when Bret Hart beat Ric Flair back in 92 for his first WWF championship. That's not a thing!
They
keep trying to shoehorn it.
Technically speaking, they had a thing in WCW as well. I mean, Flair was Bret's first match in WCW, sold out in 1998.
It still doesn't make this a thing.
No, I agree with you. I don't think that there's as much history between the two families as the WWE would like you to believe that there is. But at the same time, it gives an cute little biographical story to attach to the video package. But back to the match itself here. I wanted so badly to care about this match here because I think Natalya's done very well with the women's title, and I think Charlotte's been one of the better workers in the women's division all year. I just didn't connect with me at all. And that finish is just, why? Why do all that inside of the match and then have that finish? Like, I get the idea that they want to continue the feud between these two ladies, and I'm okay with that. But at the same time, you could have Natty win dirty and still be able to continue the feud between these two. You don't need to go the route of Natty getting herself intentionally disqualified.
Especially when the referee's count was already at 6.
Have them go to a double countout if you want to extend the feud to another pay-per-view or another special main event level SmackDown, or God forbid if you decide to air the Starrcade house show as an actual network special.
which seriously, if you're charging $600 for the first three rows of seats, you damn well better be televising that.
Not to mention, it's a double steel cage main event.
Where a lot of people are thinking Charlotte wins the belt because there's no outside issues there. But that's not till next month.
That being said, credit to Charlotte for her selling of the knee, but at the same time, the finish does leave a sour taste in your mouth due to the disqualification.
I can't even give Charlotte credit to selling her knee. I can't. Because guess what? If your knee hurts that bad, you're not going for a moonsault to the floor.
It's a work.
You're the one talking about giving credit to Charlotte selling her knee.
She sold her knee getting up to the top rope. Adrenaline, it makes you do crazy things. Ask Shane McMahon, he'll tell you.
Yeah, no kidding. But to me, a lot of this match was slow and boring, and to me, maybe not going through the motions, but not getting anywhere until, you know, the very tail end of it. And especially with the fact that you still have the realization of, hey, maybe there's the cash-in, but you have Natalya beating the hell out of Charlotte when in reality it should have been the other way around, you would think. Because, you know, it's the whole thing is, you know, that when's the champion at their most vulnerable? And just to me, the match, I wasn't a huge fan of the match. And then just the ending was really weird.
Yeah, here's the thing, though. Traditionally, SmackDown pay-per-views usually have at least one or two endings that make you think, why the hell did they do that? We've already gotten our two endings that made you think, why the hell did they do that? And then we get to our next match, and it's really, why the fucking hell did they do that?
Our final title match of the evening.
Wait. Before we get to that match, though, there is one other thing to discuss of importance in here.
Oh, was it here?
Yes.
Okay. The return of the Fashion Files.
Woo!
How is something so stupid so damn entertaining? Seriously. I know the credibility of the Ascension is completely just dead. But you know what? They are entertaining me more in the Fashion Files than they ever did. So they found something.
Would you like to know my thoughts on the credibility of the Ascension? I actually think they're more credible now than they were.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Because I'm actually entertained and invested in them now.
Oh, okay.
This is the first time in my life I have ever found the Ascension entertaining.
Especially with Connor breaking out the Brother Jack dude mustache.
Carry on with your description.
Am I wrong?
Carry on with your description of the segment. I will give my opinion on it once you're done.
I mean, there's not really much that you can really talk about here. It's the fact that the Fashion Police, obviously Brazongo, Fabrice, Tyler Breeze and Fandango, you know, case closed and everything, and they have a box for their case to be, and then the Ascension come and bring them a gift. It's a poster of themselves that says, "We want to be your friend." And I'm trying to remember, oh, and then they have a interesting briefcase that is left after they throw the Ascension out, and it's apparently a new case. New Fashion File case, not just new briefcase. And it leads to next week we get Pulp Fashion.
It's not just a briefcase, it's a new case. Yes, it is.
And apparently Randy Orton is allergic to sleeves.
Orton wasn't the one that I found funny on the board tonight.
Really? Because
there was a straight up shot at Raven on that board tonight.
There was only one that I couldn't see. And it was the one on the lowest, on the lower right hand side, the farthest right and the lowest. And it, I know it said, what year is it? But I could not tell that picture. But other than that, that's part of the reason why you watch this. What jokes are they going to crack? Which, by the way, the Orton joke, which is weird because he actually had a hoodie, I think, that had sleeves tonight. Or no, it didn't. But Orton would be allergic to pants. But KO is allergic to sleeves.
Orton would be allergic to putting Rusev over. Oh, it got too real on here. Anyway.
As far as the segment itself goes, I'll go back to saying what I said while we were discussing this in the Facebook chat there. I actually care about the Ascension. I don't think I've ever uttered those words before. That is verbatim what I said inside of the chat there as I was watching this, because I actually felt bad for the Ascension.
Because they were thrown out of the office?
No, because they just want friends, man. It's all about the power of friendship.
I bet Daniel Bryan would be their friend.
I mean, they do have the beards. Anyway.
I still think we're looking at the Authors of Pain eventually for the Ascension, although, or not for the Ascension, for the Fashion Police. But a lot of that will have to wait due to everything that's going on down in other places, and I won't go into specifics here.
Because somebody in the Facebook chat had to spoil the taping, and that's all I'll say. Jerk.
Wait, what now?
I was saying, because somebody had to spoil the tapings where a certain announcement was made, then Triple H spoiled it himself.
Yeah, I wasn't happy about the fact that they gave it away during the inside of the Facebook chat either, Glenn.
Anyway, so speaking of being brought down, WWE title time.
Your winner and new WWE. Oh, wait, that didn't happen? What the fuck?
As Jinder Mahal. Ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha-ha laughing. I said, ha, 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 Paul.
Nope, that was racist.
I was laughing.
Move on.
Defends the championship against Shinsuke Nakamura. And you know what, quite frankly, with all the racist comments that Jinder had been making? Why?
It turns out that WrestleMania 19 booking is still in effect in this company. Racist wins! The racist wins!
Okay, the guy who's being portrayed as...
Yankees?
The guy who's being portrayed as the fans being racist against him while being racist against the other guy wins. I should be more specific.
This was a copy of their SummerSlam match.
I have nothing nice to say about this match. I'd rather just move on.
No, we can't. We can't because of how it ends.
No, we can because we're going to talk about it later, I'm sure.
We can't because of how it ends. Because Jinder wins clean. This is the end of Nakamura in the WWE title hunt for now. Who the hell is next?
Until he wins the Royal Rumble.
But who the hell is next? AJ? Gotta be AJ. Or maybe Bobby? But
nah, too early for Bobby. I'm thinking AJ.
It's too early for Bobby, but reminder, your WWE champion is Jinder Mahal.
All right, that's a valid point, actually. But I think Bobby's not done with his current situation, as we'll find out next.
Yeah, I was...
Segway!
That one pissed me off. Speaking of being pissed off...
Yeah, we'll talk more about this contest a little bit later. At least one of us will. Dun-dun-dun!
Yeah, you. All right. So our next contest are technically sub-main event. Bobby Roode versus Dolph Ziggler. First off, was I the only one that was kind of expecting a double glorious entrance?
I didn't. I fully expected the R-Truth treatment that we got for Ziggler with the music cutting out. Actually, I didn't even expect the music to play at all. I was a little bit surprised when it did. But I expected the spotlight walk down the ramp for Ziggler's entrance.
So the Batista entrance?
Yeah, because of the fact that that's kind of been how he's been playing up here. The fact is he doesn't need this grandiose entrance in order to prove the fact that he's the best wrestler in the company.
And then he loses.
Well, eventually the bell rings.
He used to be one of the best wrestlers in the company.
When he's motivated, he still is.
Like I said, when he gives a damn.
Yeah, I think the problem is the fact that he's seeing the writing on the wall for the end of his contract, and yeah, we're not going to get anything of reasonable sustenance out of Ziggler, I'm guessing, anytime soon.
I believe it soon. Like, really soon, if I'm not mistaken with him. But be that as it may, yet another match where somebody just has an endless rest hold, in this case Dolph Ziggler and the damn sleeper. This was 11 and a half minutes. He actually spent close to three of it with a sleeper. And it drove me nuts. Because, why? You know, and it's like, oh, yeah, I'm the best wrestler. I don't need a big grandiose entrance. And then you do that. I used to be a Dolph Ziggler fan. I really did. But now, not anymore. I'm sick of seeing him. And he can leave tomorrow and I would not shed a tear. It's just, meh.
Let's talk about the finish with the multiple roll-up reversals, and then after Reed stands tall by grabbing the tights, Ziggler gets his heat back after the match by hitting the zigzag on Reed. Yeah, not the most inauspicious debut for Reed on pay-per-view, I would say. He has to use tights in order to pick up a cheap pinfall victory and then get laid out after the match immediately. But this is the guy that you're touting as the newest, biggest free agent on SmackDown, and that he's going to be the one that can do something to change the... Yeah, this is things like this is why people don't take call-ups then. Things like this is why people don't take call-ups from NXT to SmackDown seriously. Look at what they've done to Nakamura. Look at what they've done with Roode here. Now, I'm willing to give them a shot with Roode, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that Ziggler's so checked out that he really doesn't care what happens. But at the same time, if you know that Ziggler's in that mind frame, maybe pairing him with Reed's not the best idea if you want to get Reed over with your fan base.
At the same time, I don't think it's fair how you're doing what you just said with Nakamura. While, yeah, he didn't win it, but he just debuted in April, and he's either been at or near the top the entire time. Bobby Roode has been in the mid-card already for the entire time since his debut. Nakamura went almost straight to the top after beating Dolph Ziggler, ironically. So I don't think it's fair.
Yeah, agree to disagree here. I think that they're not starting Reed off on the right foot if this is going to be his debut pay-per-view performance, my point.
All right, fair enough. So, obviously, though, this has to continue pretty much, considering, as we mentioned, Bobby Roode gets a win via the tights. his first 10 attempts going into it, like when they were doing the constant reversals, he didn't use the tights. He used it on the second time. He used it on the second time. Dolph tried using the tights both times. So I think that was one of those inkling of bad guy Bobby Roode, but at the same time, hey, you know, he did it to me. Why can't I do it to him? So, all righty. Match number 8 on the night, 7 on the main show. It is main event time. Shane
38 minutes.
Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens. Now,
38 minutes.
And the entire, I would say, minute 20 to 38 was awesome. To be fair, the one thing that I think threw everybody off on my phone, because I was looking at the time when I realized this was going to run long, this match started at 10 to 10 my time. So it would be 10 to 11 your time. And I'm sitting there and looking at it, I was like, all right, so this goes 15, maybe 20. And I'm talking bell time was 10 to the hour. I was not expecting this to be 40 minutes, almost. The second longest Hell in a Cell match of all time. Only the sixth to go north of a half hour. The first half of this was slow. I'm not going to deny that. I don't think anybody will. I know you won't, because I already know what you're going to talk about is the fact that it was almost 40 minutes long. But the second half of this match, they turned it up. And maybe it was a little bit of move, rest. But at the same time, those moves are happening on top of the cell. Only the third match, I believe, to ever actually have the participants fighting on top of the cell. The first one being Cactus Jack and Triple H, the second one being Triple H and Chris Jericho, which ended on top of the cell. This one didn't. But I know you're going to complain that it's long, but after 40 minutes, that ending to me made it worth it. In the fact that first Kevin Owens takes the dive from about halfway up, eerily similar to the one that Rollins and, oh, I'm sorry, so this was actually the fourth time that they fought on top of itself. Reminiscent of the Ambrose and Rollins bump.
They never actually made it to the top of the cage, though. They only fought on the side of the cell.
No, I could have sworn they started on top of the cell.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't Charlotte and Sasha take a bump similar to this off the cage as well?
Powerbomb, but that was only off the side. That was, they definitely did not make it to the top.
Oh, it wasn't a knockoff. It was just a powerbomb by Charlotte to Sasha?
Yeah, because then that's when 3.0 were the paramedics, and they got one of the cables caught in Sasha's neck brace.
Big magic. When will you learn? All right, moving on. Back to the discussion here. I don't even remember. You know what the sad thing is about the Ambrose Rollins one? The only thing I remember about it is the stupid finish with the hologram and Bray Wyatt. Like, I literally remember none of the match, just the finish.
I just remember the dive off. I totally forgot about the hologram until you mentioned it. But Dean Ambrose looked like an idiot for many matches in a row in that case. Because then he had the DLC match where he looked like an idiot and Sparks got shot in his face.
Back to the match at hand today in regards to this particular Hell in a Cell match here. Actually, I thought some of the stuff inside of the ring was okay. I thought the constant trash talking to Shane's kids was hilarious. Kevin's the master with the microphone and even off microphone when he knows he's in microphone shot.
Don't wag your finger at me.
He's doing this for you.
Is he one of the best talkers in the company right now?
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. I don't think there's any question. He might be the best.
What are you doing?
But anyways, let's go back to the match itself here, as I was saying. Some of it I was okay with. Some of what happened inside of the ring. I thought Shane's coast-to-coast looked good, but I thought the fact that they didn't have Owens kick out of it kind of made Owens look like he should have lost the match there, and by proxy kind of made Owens look weak. Because it makes the ref look like a moron, and it makes Owens look like he was going to get beaten by a third-timer. Calling him a part-timer is too generous.
But at the same time, you're talking about a part-timer who's out for blood. So, also, there was the fact that I could have sworn that, I would hope accidentally and not, you know, purposely, it looked like Shane tried to put his foot through Kevin Owens' jaw on that coast-to-coast. Because he was, he seemed pretty snug, and he went a little low on that trash can. And it looked like he kind of kicked up a little bit. And it looked like, at one point, like Shane caught him square in the jaw with his foot.
Yeah, well, at least he didn't land on his foot like he did test.
True.
I mean, no, I won't make the joke. I'll be nice. No.
Anyway.
Yeah, no dead test joke. All right, moving on. All things considered, though, I thought the turning point in the match was the cannonball into the table.
Where Shane literally slides.
Huh?
Where Shane literally slides out of the way. Like, not even a metaphor. He slid down the table to get out of the way.
Which I thought was genius.
Yeah, oh no, I'm not denying that. I loved it, because I'm like, how is that? I've never really seen that done before.
And would you like to know why there were bolt cutters inside of the cell? Because of course there were.
I mean, well, okay. Not why were there bolt cutters, it's why were there bolt cutters inside of the ring. Once again, MacGyver. To me, that's the turning point of the match, which that I think the cannonball led into that. To me, the turning point of the match, like where the second half of the match started, which, I mean, if you watch it, it kind of is where the second half started. Shane gets a pair of bolt cutters and damn near Mark Henry's it.
Oh, I noticed that too. He had a hell of a time getting that chain to break, didn't he?
He didn't break the chain. It wasn't the chain he was trying to break. It was the lock.
Well, either way, he had a hell of a time with it. It probably took him 3 attempts with those bolt cutters.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I'd argue more, because I think 3 of the attempts were on camera. But yeah, Shane had a hell of a time getting that lock broken. Eventually he did, and he did not completely Mark Henry it, thank God.
Progress!
And so starts the second half of the match, which, why would they mysteriously add the false count anywhere stipulation to a Hell in a Cell match?
It's almost like somebody's coming off of the top of the cell. Dun, dun, dun.
Which, by the way, if you look back to the aforementioned Triple H and Jericho, Hell in a Cell is false count anywhere. You didn't
know
that had the stipulation.
That was changed, actually, after that match happened. There was a rule instituted going forward that all pinfalls inside of Hell in a Cell had to happen inside of the confines of the ring.
Well, we damned. I did not know that. Thank you.
Yes, I do remember. I do remember them talking. I think they mentioned it in the build up towards Triple H and Kevin Nash at Bad Blood 03. Hey, dislike the participants as much as you may like to. The match itself is actually not bad. I mean, granted, a lot of smoke and mirrors, but not bad.
Only one of the participants. Anyway. So War and Peace, the wrestling match continues. They do end up having quite a lengthy brawl atop of the cell. And this was the point where you and I both had the same feeling. And here's why I'm okay with how long this match was and the booking of this match and everything about that. That's what you want. You wanted those butterflies in your stomach. You wanted that feeling of, oh, good God, you know, what the hell is going to happen? And they hit a handful of wrestling moves, a Russian leg sweep, suplex, you know, a few different things up top, including, if I'm not mistaken, did KO hit the Papa Powerbomb?
Yes, on top of the cell.
Yes. And the cage doesn't give, thank God. But it was one of those things where it just sat in the pit of your stomach of, oh, my God, they're going to do this. And they did. Boy, did that crowd boo when KO starts climbing down, though. But KO ends up being the one to take the fall, and he takes the fall from about halfway up off the side and goes through the Spanish announce table, because of course. And then Shane, wanting blood, essentially, and wanting to make Kevin Owens pay for his sins, puts KO on the English announce table and climbs back up. And in my head, I'm like, because it worked so well the last time you did this. Similar situation. Shane takes a hell of a fall, and KO isn't there. And in what may have made the entire thing worth it, Sami Zayn saves Kevin Owens. And Shane then...
Wait, whoa, stop. Repeat that.
I know. Sami Zayn, of all people, after all of the years of fighting everywhere, including NXT, they have not gotten along a single day of their WWE careers. And yet, Sami Zayn is the one that saves Kevin Owens. And not just saves Kevin Owens, drags his ass over, pushes the paramedics out of the way, and gets the referee to count to three, so that after almost 40 minutes, the second longest cell match ever, and Kevin Owens barely walks out the winner.
So what you're saying is Fight Forever just changed to Fight Together.
Or Friends Forever.
I like mine better.
Hey, friends can disagree, though, but... there's no way in hell anybody expected it. Don't even try to tell me you did.
You're going to hate me for saying this, but I'm actually on a podcast talking about the possibility of it happening from earlier in the week.
There is no way.
If you go back and listen to the SmackDown review...
I know you may have said it, but no. You
did
were
I
going
think,
out of your ass.
Did I think that it was going to happen? No, but I tossed it out as a possibility based on the way that Shane ignored Sammy on SmackDown. What happens if Sammy comes out and helps Kevin on Sunday to drive home the point that Owens isn't to be taken lightly and neither is Sammy? Go back and listen to this week's SmackDown Live review with me and Liz Pugliese on the W2M Network.
The weird part about it is, if you look at Sammy's reactions to what he had just done, this didn't feel like a Sami Zayn heel turn. this felt like, for the love of God, yes, we hate each other, but he's still been my friend for 20 years. I don't want this to happen to him. Because he still, you see it on his face to where he looks like he still can't believe he had just done what he had just done, which was save one of his most bitter rivals. And I think it shocked everybody at Little Caesars Arena. I think it shocked most people on TV. I was shocked. And to me, it made the entire thing pay off, which is why I'm okay with it being a 40-minute war and peace of a wrestling match. Possibly the longest of the year. Outside of the Rumble.
I mentioned the possibility on Tuesday, but I didn't think it was actually going to happen. That being said, I am now infinitely more interested in what Sami Zayn is up to than at any point I had ever been when he had gone over to SmackDown. I'm just glad to see them finally doing something with Sami. And I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes on Tuesday. Like, what's the explanation that they give? What's the reasoning? Where is it going to go going forward? How's Daniel Bryan going to react to what happened?
Yeah, because it was definitely a surprise. But that wraps up the, I believe, 9th WWE Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. And let's get right to it. Time for the big finish. So, best and the worst match of the show. I already know where this is going, so... what is your worst match of the show?
My worst match of the show is Jinder Mahal and Shinsuke Nakamura. And that's a lot to do with the finish for said match and a lot to do with the ring work provided during said match as well. I thought that Natty and Charlotte was probably just as rough sitting through it in regards to the crowd reaction, but I feel like the ring work was a little bit better in the Charlotte and Natty match. They told a more cohesive story than they did during the course of Jinder versus Shinsuke.
You're not going to ask me?
I figured once I stopped talking, you would take that as your clue that it was your turn.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick, what was your least favorite match?
The main event, no. Orton and Rusev. With credit to the WWE Championship match. But I said you got a semi-motivated Randy Orton. That didn't mean a damn thing.
I think Orton put in enough effort for me to drag this kicking and screaming above Mahal and Nakamura.
I would disagree. Personally, why did Orton win? Why did Orton win? You know, it's like you said, though. The fans love Rusev. And you continue to just crap on him.
Is it possible to be too over? Is that the problem for Rusev? Is he too over for his own good?
Maybe. Well, hell, look at Cesaro. Cesaro, for the most part, is too over. And now, he's probably going to be starring in Tooth Fairy 3.
Okay, first of all, his name is Cesaro.
The Swift Cyborg?
Yes, Swift Cyborg. They're actually selling the shirt, people. It's ridiculous. All right, nope. Getting back to the show tonight, though. I think the problem is that Rusev is too popular for his own good. I don't think that enough people take him seriously for him to be a credible threat as a heel, and I don't think they want to turn him babyface because there's still a large portion of the crowd that does respond to his heel act. And unfortunately, it ends up leaving Rusev in purgatory and unable to do much of anything.
Real quick, I looked it up. according to wrestling data, which is pretty damn reliable, this is the third longest WWE match of the year. The longest, that's a gimme, Royal Rumble. Second longest, technically, is the House of Horrors match. Just under 45 minutes from beginning to end. Anyway, it's just, when Orton doesn't give a damn, I thought he did kind of give a little bit of a damn tonight, but...
So you're saying he gave half a damn. He gave a duh.
Yeah, and because of it, we kind of barely got over a duh. Alrighty. Once again, I already know where you're going with this. What's the best match of this show?
Do you even need to ask?
Well, considering I disagree, yes, technically I do. Per law, I do.
Okay, that just gave away where you're going with this.
No, it didn't.
Yes, it did, because you're going to go with the main event because of the twist finish, and then I'm going to go with the opener because of the fact that it was badass balls-to-the-wall action.
You don't know that.
Okay, Patrick, what was your best match?
I asked you first, asshole.
I already answered, asshole.
You didn't give any description as to why?
Yes, I did. I said the opener because it was balls-to-the-wall action from start to finish.
Joke's on you, women's title match.
Okay, let's give an actual answer.
WWE title match.
He's Patrick Tetsa. I'm Harry Broadhurst. Thanks for listening.
Yes, the main event. Outside of the fact that the joke that I keep making about it is that it was wrestling versions of War and Peace. Seriously, 40 minutes. But, and yes.
I mean, 40 minutes, 600 pages. Take your pick.
No. I said War and Peace, not Bret Hart's book.
War and Peace is like 600 pages, too.
I know. But, and I know that there were also complaints about the fact that a suit was in the main event. I'm okay with that. Because this was not just any old feud. This was a blood feud. This was a feud that got very personal. The only way that it could have gotten worse is if Shane started mentioning KO's kid. Probably would have actually gotten in trouble for that, but... You know, be that as it may, I'm okay with it being the main event, even over the SmackDown Tag Team title match. Do I think the SmackDown Tag Team title match should have gone first? Hell no. The U.S. title match first. Switch the spots. But Shane and Kevin also, I thought, went balls to the wall. They just had a much bigger window to fill. You cannot go complete, nonstop, all the way forward, sixth gear, for 40 minutes. Did the match have to be 40 minutes? No. You probably could have gotten everything done in a half hour. But there was still this need of, it needs, you know, this needs to have a finish, at least to this aspect of it. And to me, it did. But it still had a really big monkey wrench thrown in as to, why did Sammy save Kevin? You know, after everything that Kevin Owens has done to Sami Zayn, why help him now? To me, yes. I know you made the crack about it, you know, just a couple minutes ago, but to me, the finish made everything worth it. Because all of a sudden it's like, wait, whoa, what the hell is going on? And this was one of the few, very few times that, to me, a very long match ended up paying off. I didn't think the Rollins-Ambrose ladder match that they had at Money in the Bank a couple years ago, that went 35 minutes, I think? I didn't think it had that much of a payoff. If I'm not mistaken, Rollins won on a fluke. You know, a lot of these long matches...
Rollins won because of Kane.
Yeah. If you have these long matches, you need something at the end. And to me, this did not feel like Kevin Owens winning on a fluke. This felt like Kevin Owens winning because sometimes you still have a guardian angel. This still feels different to me, because this was not Sami Zayn doing something touche. This was Sami Zayn saving his friend, which is why I think it kind of feels different to me than the ladder match that I know went north of a half hour, a couple of years ago. I'm okay with it. And I thought Shane and Kevin had one hell of a match. They had a long brawl on top of the cell that left those butterflies in your stomach of what the hell could happen. And it worked. So, yeah, for me, it is the man. Length be damned.
Well, I will tell you this much. According to the current WWE Facebook poll, 61% of the responders agree with you.
Thumbs up.
24% agree with me. The other 15% are clearly on crack.
All right. Before we get to the final score, I want to ask you one additional opinion question.
All right. Well, we're almost an hour and 20 in already, so let's make this kind of snappy.
All right. But I'll ask, No Mercy or Hell in a Cell, who won this month?
Well, technically, Hell in a Cell is facing Tables, Ladders, and Chairs.
Between the two, who won? Well, yeah, it's also kind of hard to because SmackDown didn't have a September pay-per-view.
Yeah, so not really fair, in my opinion, to compare the two of them. And I think the fair comparison would be the stipulation pay-per-view that will be Tables, Ladders, and Chairs, because Hell in a Cell is in and of itself a stipulated pay-per-view. So I decline to answer that question on grounds of inferable comparison.
All right, fine.
Fair enough?
No, but okay.
We can revisit this conversation in 2 weeks when WWE presents Tables, Ladders, and Chairs, October 22nd.
So, all right. Final score.
7. Main opening.
After all the bitches you did.
Opening match is worth 3 or 4 points in and of itself. That might be my front runner for match of the year for the WWE. It is that good.
Do you include NXT?
Yes, actually.
Then, to me, not even is it match of the year. It's not even tag team match of the year.
Which tag match are you going with?
NXT TakeOver Chicago's main event.
The ladder match?
Hell, you could also include.
I don't think the ladder match was that great. The finish was memorable, but I don't think the ladder match was that great.
Also, I'd argue the triple threat in Orlando.
Okay, that was pretty good. But anyways, in my opinion, the Usos and the New Day put up a match of the year quality kind of match tonight. And it is a match that I highly recommend, that if you haven't had a chance to watch the show, if you listen to the show and you're wondering if it's worth watching, if anything else, seek out the opener. And then I guess you can seek out the main event for the arguably kind of almost that kind of WTF booking aspect, you know? Like, why the hell did they do this? And it's something that they so rarely do these days that when they have moments like this, you get intrigued and you wonder and you hope that they'll be able to deliver on the follow-up. Granted, not always the case, but perhaps this will be the big carryover angle to get us through these dreaded fall months into the chase to Royal Rumble and obviously back onto the road to WrestleMania. The matches themselves weren't necessarily bad. It's Charlotte and Natalya is around the 2-star mark. Mahal and Nakamura is around the 2-star mark. Orton and Rusev is around 2.5 stars. The triple threat I thought was really good, even though it had a dead crowd. As I said, the opener is fantastic. Rude and Ziggler is probably around the 2-star mark. The main event I probably put around the 3-star mark. So it's worth, if you have 4 hours to spare, it's worth watching.
He's not kidding.
I mean, if you count the pre-show match and then the overrun on the main show, you're looking at about 4 hours to see everything. So I'm going to go with a 7. How about you, Patrick? What do you give this show?
Oh, you ask me now?
Okay, fine. Never mind. Don't let me ask you. I take that back. Ask yourself.
6.5. 6.5 for much the same reason, but I think while the matches weren't bad, you have two great matches. Thank God they were the theme of the pay-per-view. They were the entire point of the pay-per-view. To me, both matches delivered. One of them, you know, being long, obviously, but whatever. I thought the triple threat was good for the most part. What's weird is I actually thought most of the time with Ty was actually better than most of the time with AJ, which is weird. Rusev and Orton, not terrible. Not bad, honestly. I didn't think it was that bad, but poo on your finish. The women's title match was one of those that left you scratching your head. And at least in this case, it wasn't a finisher out of nowhere like we got twice last month. Yes, I said last month, not last pay-per-view, so shush. And Rude and Ziggler, meh. And I'm missing one. Oh, the WWE title match. Meh. I would say it's 6.5, but go out of your way for the two feature matches at the very, very least. And if you want to go back and see where, you know, WrestleMania 40 main eventer Baron Corbin's career started, you'll be able to find it here with his first title win. But yeah, I would say 6.5 with about 5 of those points automatically coming from both Hell in a Cell matches. Alrighty.
Yeah, definitely the two Hell in a Cell matches are your standout performances on this show, but I do think that the triple threat deserves some credit because despite the crowd not giving them much, in my opinion, I do feel it was pretty well worked by all three gentlemen. And I like Corbin more than most, so that might play a factor in my decision there as well. Plus, I definitely recommend everybody go scoop out Corbin's new theme song. It's pretty awesome.
Indeed. So that about wraps things up for us with Woo Reacts to WWE Hell in a Cell. We will be back at our normal time slot next week as basically Revolution Pro UK will present 205 Live. There's actually, I went back and looked at the card. It is Rev Pro UK Angle versus Sabre Jr. That's the actual name of the show. Obviously, the main event being Kurt Angle versus the Technical Wizard and Cruiserweight Classic competitor Zack Sabre Jr. But there's actually quite a few well-known names on this card, including Noam Dar and including Marty Scurll and Will Ospreay, I believe. So it will be our trip to the UK. And then 2 weeks from now, we'll be back very late. Luckily for the last time in a 5-week span, because WWE be damned, as we will be reacting to WWE TLC Tables, Ladders, and Chairs. Oh my. And, real quick, before we get out of here, we are a presentation of the WWE.
Not yet. I have some stuff to plug to. If you get to plug future shows, so do I. You can listen to myself and my new co-host, Liz Puglisi, on the SmackDown Live and 205 Live reviews this Tuesday night with the fallout from Hell in a Cell tonight. As Patrick mentioned, we'll be back here next Sunday. I'm also available for your football needs on Wednesday night with the kickoff here on the W2M Network as well. Okay, now you can take us home.
Real quick, did you almost forget the name of the first show that you cover? Because it sounded like it.
Try that again.
Did you almost forget the first show that you cover? Because it sure as hell sounded like it.
I still can't hear you. I have a bad connection right now. You're going to have to send me this in Messenger.
Okay. So, and as we mentioned, we are a presentation of the W2M Network. For More information, including all previous episodes of Wrestling Unwrapped and Woo Reacts, along with all of the great information from the week in both football and college football, including the new Top 25 from W2Mnet, be sure to check out W2Mnet.com. Until next week and until 2 weeks from now, for Sean Garmer and for Harry Broadhurst, I'm Patrick Hetta. Thank you very much for joining us as Woo reacts to WWE Hell in a Cell 2017.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.